So welcome everybody. It's my pleasure to announce the next speaker and talk. Speaker is David Holton. He specialized in crypto cracking using FPGAs. He has already given talks at the CCC events about the A51 attack, and it's the organizer of the TurCamp and TurCon in the US. So please give a warm welcome to David Holton. The stage is yours.
All right. All right, thanks a lot. Okay, so I'm here today to talk to all of you about legacy crypto, and more specifically DES. And this may be a little annoying for a lot of you in that all of us thought that DES was dead back in the late 90s, like nobody's gonna use this anymore. But it turns out that DES is actually used in lots of different protocols that are still used today. So did anybody see the talk I gave in 2012 with Moxie Marlinspike on cracking MSChat v2? Okay, good. So a few people, but I'm just gonna do a quick overview of this because it's kind of part of the background for this talk. So MSChat v2 is basically a way of doing mutual authentication using a password. And it's used in primarily PPTP VPNs and WPA Enterprise. And so if you connected to the wireless network here using, you know, username and password, you are using MSChat v2, which relies on DES. And another thing is that the research that we did is nothing new. Bruce Schneier and Mudge and David Wagner published a very similar attack back in the late 90s. And so this attack was known about for, you know, almost 13 years up to the point that we presented a practical way of exploiting it. And so people knew for, you know, over a dozen years that state actors, well-funded organizations could basically break any of these protocols that relied on MSChat v2. And just as a quick overview of how MSChat v2 works, you have, you know, hello, you get a random server challenge, the client generates a challenge, and then that's kind of hashed together to create your challenge hash. But the important part here is that you have this challenge hash, which is your known plain text. It's actually sent across in the clear, so both sides can you know, verify the password. And then basically use DES to encrypt this challenge hash with essentially the NT hash of the person's password, which is essentially the password equivalent. And then that creates a challenge response. It gets sent across, and that's how you verify that the client has the correct password to authenticate to a service. And up until this point, people had just tried attacking the user password because obviously, you know, most of the time, the password is the weakest link in most of these systems. People choose horrible passwords, and that's usually the fastest way to attack this. And so people would, you know, do dictionary attacks and try all the commonly used passwords in order to try to break this. And using programs like John the Ripper or Sleep, or there's a number of different ones that rely on a word list. But if you wanted to crack, say, you know, a 255 character password with uppercase and special characters and everything, you're looking at around 92 bits that you would have to brute force, which is, you know, would take a ridiculous amount of time. Whereas by attacking the DES operations in this to crack the NT hash, we're looking at, you know, on the order of around 2^56, 2^57 sort of operations. So it wasn't until recently that this sort of attack was actually feasible to actually do an attack on DES. And so this was outlined in the late 90s, and so we thought, oh, why, you know, it should be easy to do this. I built, you know, a couple of DES crackers using FPGAs, so we thought, let's try to actually make this a practical attack. And so looking into this some more, one thing that you start to notice is that your NT hash is 128 bits, and a DES key is 56 bits. And so so actually this NT hash in these first two, you know, is the full 2^56, but this one is only a 16-bit key that's being used. It's just zero padded to be 56 bits. And when you look certainly at the complexity, yeah, it's, you know, 2^57 or so. But because of that 16-bit key, you can basically throw that away. That you can do that with any sort of computer. You could do it with an Arduino, right? And so so now we looked at attacking the first two keys, which are the full 2^56. And one thing to notice is that they're encrypting the exact same plain text between these two DES operations. And so a naive implementation of this is that you crack both keys totally separately, where you go through the whole key space to try to crack one key and go through the whole key space to crack the other one. But one nice thing about them using the same plain text for both is that you can go through the key space just one time and just have two compares after you do your DES operation to crack both of the keys. And then on average, you're going to be cracking both keys in around 70% of the key space. So you can do the math there. But it really comes down to around 2 to the 56 DES operations to break this. And so we demonstrated that, there's a slight optimization where you can do it in 2 to the 56 instead of the 2 to the 57 point whatever that that Schneier and Mudge pointed out back in the 90s. And the other big thing about our talk is that we made it accessible to everybody, so everybody could perform this attack. And so how we did this was Moxie Marlin Spike already had this service called cloudcracker.com. Had anybody heard of Cloudcracker? It was somewhat popular in 2012, and so we basically hooked up a bunch of FPGAs in the back end and tied it into cloudcracker.com and published this Python app that would extract all of the key material for cracking PBTP VPN exchanges. And then you could just submit a token to Cloudcracker, and then within 24 hours, we would send you the DES key, or the NT hash. And so then you could use that NT hash to authenticate to the PBTP network, decrypt all the traffic, basically do all the different sort of attacks that you would require a password to do. And a lot of you may be thinking, we gave this talk in 2012, the EFF came out with a DES cracker in 99 or 98, and so shouldn't DES be super easy to crack at this point? And so just a quick overview, the EFF DES cracker in 1998 took around 9.2 days to go through the whole key space. And we wanted to get this down to around 24 hours. And so looking at all the available options out there, if you used, say, AWS, EC2 CPU instances, it would take around 80,000 CPU cores and cost on the order of $100,000 or so to crack a DES key in that sort of time period, assuming that they had those instances available for you to spin up. On GPU instances, it would be around 1,800 GPUs and take around $20,000 in EC2 credits to crack a key. And what we offered was $20 to crack a key, and it would return it back in around 24 hours. And this was essentially hardware that we were kind of like doing burn-in testing on with my company because we make FPGA boards. And so we would just run them through the system to crack DES keys, to test them out before we ship them out the door to customers. And then eventually, a lot of this hardware kind of went end of life. Right now, it's a few generations behind. And so now we don't really sell them anymore. So it ended up getting kind of migrated into my basement. And so now I have this server in my basement that cracks DES in less than 24 hours. And then, of course, after we gave this talk in 2012, everybody rushed to fix everything, right? Right? I mean, of course, everybody fixes everything, right? And so specifically, one of the bigger VPN providers that we pointed out specifically in our talk, iPredator, and said, this company has many, many customers, and they're vulnerable to this. Their fix was basically to just do a little post on their webpage saying that they recommend that you don't do PBTP VPNs, but they still offered the service, so everybody kept on using it, of course, right? And then also people kind of dismissed our attacks on WPA Enterprise in that everybody does strong certificate checking. I'm sure all of you have installed the certificate for the network for SHA 2017, right? Can I see a show of hands of who actually installed the certificate for the network? Okay, so a few people, that's good. But in large enterprise environments, enforcing that across all of the different clients and people that are bringing their own devices and connecting to the network is very problematic. And in a lot of cases, these operating systems don't do very good certificate checking. So anyway, we started running the service, and almost immediately, I started seeing very interesting jobs pop up. Just as an example here, this top line is kind of a standard job. Everything's fairly random. But then you look at this one, and the plain text is 1122-3344, and that seems strange for, basically a random SHA-1 of a couple challenges. So, that seemed a little weird. We're wondering what that was. And then also we got these, where both the ciphertexts are exactly the same. And so that's very crazy odds to end up with something like that. And so we're like, what are people using the service for? And then we started seeing articles of people, you know, using our service for cracking WPA Enterprise, which is great. And then also this kind of popped up. Has anybody here used the SMB capture module of Metasploit or Responder or anything like that to crack Windows authentication? Okay, well anyway, so this is kind of the standard challenge string with Windows authentication that if you're doing Windows authentication man-in-the-middle attacks, most of these tools will just set this as the challenge. And then there's already rainbow tables for attacking the password based on you know, captures using this challenge. And so I was like, oh, well, people are obviously using our service for cracking passwords that they aren't able to crack with these password-based rainbow tables. And so people were obviously using the system for all sorts of other purposes than what we were originally intending it for. And then one day, all the traffic kind of dropped off to my server, and CloudCracker went down mysteriously. I still have no idea what happened to it. But since I run TourCon, I thought maybe we could offer this as a service of my conference. And so we started this website called crack.sh, which is basically just a you know pretty front end to the DES cracking service. And it takes the exact same you know format as the CloudCracker system did for cracking these jobs. And so then you know I kind of took it upon myself to look into what people were using this for and try to add more features to you know make it applicable to a lot more things. So what features should we add? And the really the main point of all this research that we've been doing for you know 6 years now is how can we finally kill DES once and for all? And how can we get rid of this legacy algorithm that's been known to be, you know, insecure for 20 years now? So looking into Windows authentication for LANMAN and NTLM V1, if you look at how this works, it's actually very similar to MSChat V2. The only key difference is that your challenge is actually set entirely by the server instead of being hashed with a client challenge. So, and I think that this is technically MSChat V1. That they're using for Windows authentication. And I think that there's still probably other systems out there that use MSChat V1 in which you know this attack works great. And so yeah, we saw people you know using this because one of the things with using a rainbow table or using you know password-based dictionary attack is that you're attacking the password, but with our service it works 100% of the time, no matter how complex the user's password is. And so yeah, I started talking to people that were doing pen tests, and they were saying, "Oh yeah, you know, like we're trying to crack an account that doesn't even have a password set, or you know, it's like one of the computer-generated accounts that has a randomly generated 255-character-long password, and they're actually able to crack the NT hash and then log in as that user that you aren't really supposed to be able to log in as." And so this is very interesting in that a lot of people were thinking that their password security policies were really doing something, but in this case, it didn't really matter how complex the passwords were. And so so we ended up adding in some support where you can basically copy and paste in from SMB capture directly into the website, and then for $20, you know, we would send you the key. And then you could log in as that user on the network. And then also, in the meantime, this program called Responder came out, which is basically a way of doing Windows authentication man in the middle. And so if you fire up Responder, it looks for any sort of NetBIOS name resolution requests, and then it basically just resolves them to the attacker server. And then you can do downgrade attacks to downgrade them to LANMAN or NTLM V1, do the full you know, MSChat V1 authentication. And then the result is that you end up getting this response value that then you can feed into John the Ripper or feed into our website and crack the key based on that. And so so with a lot of networks, especially ones that have you know some older devices on them that require LANMAN or NTLM V1, you know you fire this up on the network and you're going to be getting just millions and millions of you know devices responding to you that are just you know automatically trying to connect to different you know file shares and authenticate on the network. And then also with WPA 2 Enterprise, since then there's been they've come out with Host APD WPE, which is basically a host AP a server that you can run on your device, and then it essentially you know fakes a base station, people connect to it, and then it gives you a nice hash that you can crack with John the Ripper or feed into our website. And then the resulting NT hash that you get from our server you can authenticate with to the network. So now you can log into the you know, enterprise network and do it without even knowing the person's password because you have the hash of their password. And then also, in the meantime, Karsten Noll gave a talk back in 2013 about cracking over-the-air updates to SIM cards. And most SIM cards, there's actually like a full Java virtual machine that supports all sorts of different things. And currently, your carrier can send remote updates to your phone and update your SIM card firmware and do all sorts of things like listening to your phone calls or scary things like that. And so he demonstrated that a lot of these cards are actually secured with single DES and basically outlined how you could use a service like CloudCracker or crack.sh to crack these over-the-air update keys and then install all sorts of nasty malware into people's SIM cards. And then also, if anybody here watches Mr. Robot, this was featured on Mr. Robot in Season 2, Episode 9. So we also wanted to make it so that any sort of other weird protocols, like lots of radio protocols use DES still, lots of satellite protocols, et cetera. We want to make it so anybody could use a service to crack anything that uses DES. So we decided to create a general purpose interface where you just kind of provide the parts of the plain text that you know and parts of the ciphertext that you know, and you can, and then we basically run it through the FPGAs and send you a list of all the possible keys that meet that criteria, and then you can do further checking on it later on with software. And so we have, basically just a simple kind of, we do the DES operation and then apply a mask and do a compare. And all this is up on GitHub if you want to try to crack something that you found. And so after I put together this interface, I wanted to, just show, create an example app for this. And some of my friends had worked on some Kerberos attacks, and they had mentioned that they'd come across a lot of networks that still use or support doing DES Kerberos authentication. And this was, this is stuff that was supported back, I think, pre-Windows 2003. But a lot of networks still have legacy machines on them that require this to be enabled. And so so I thought, this should be fun. I'll try to crack DES Kerberos. And so there's all sorts of different parts of the protocol that you can use to crack the DES key. But the key part is you have to be able to get a network capture of them actually authenticating and getting tickets and stuff like that using DES. And so I just put together a simple EtherCAP filter that substitutes basically any supported encryption type with DES CBC CRC. So now Amanda middles a connection and then says, oh, we only support DES CBC. The client connects to the server, and now they're going to be communicating just using DES. And then because the whole protocol uses ASN1, there's all sorts of plain text that's basically fixed just as part of the headers in ASN1 that pretty much are always there. And then because of how CBC works, we can basically attack any block in the whole message that's encrypted with DES to figure out the key. So it's only a matter of looking through the ASN1 and figuring out where it lines up with static values to figure out how to extract known plain text and your ciphertext to create a token to submit to the website. And the reason why this works is basically because with CBC, basically, the part of the ciphered blockchaining is that you have the ciphertext of the previous block that gets XORed with your plain text. And so both of those values are known. And so then you can use that to crack basically any block within the chain. So also on GitHub, you can take this Python script and point it at a PCAP file. And if it's using DES CBC, it'll automatically figure out the known plain text and create a submission token that you can submit to the website and crack the DES key for it. And then, of course, this works no matter how complex the person's password is because we're actually attacking the underlying protocol and not the password. And so another interesting thing that came up is that I started receiving people asking, emails from people asking if I could crack DES Crypt. And does anybody remember back when your password file had had a hash in it that had was a DES crypt password? Yeah, I mean, like nowadays nothing supports it, right? And so why are these people trying to crack DES crypt hashes, right? And so I started looking around, and I guess that DesCrypt was, it's basically 25 rounds of Des to hash the password. And then they add in some salt to mess up the S boxes to salt it. But it was originally designed so that running on a PDP 11, it would take over a second to compute a password. And so obviously it's a bit faster nowadays. But nobody uses this anymore, right? Right? So it turns out that QNX still uses DES. I think that they actually support two different types. They either support DESCrypt or their own proprietary one that's fully reversible. So DESCrypt is actually the most secure option that they support. And I found this press release from them from 2 years ago saying that they're in 50 million vehicles, and I'm sure that they're in way more. Basically, a lot of the infotainment systems use QNX, and so if you look at a lot of these talks that people are giving on car hacking, for example, this one right here is from the Charlie Miller Jeep hack from his white paper, and there's the password file with the DESCrypt hash in it. This is another talk that I found that they just showed the shadow file from a QNX system running in a vehicle somewhere. And then searching around online, you just find all these forums of people asking people to crack their DESCrypt hashes. So it's like, okay, maybe there's something to this. And so I implemented an FPGA core and support for the service to crack these, and just runs through the whole entire key space, so we can guarantee that it cracks the password 100% of the time. And this is basically all 95 possible characters, including nulls and stuff, so 96 to the power of 8, and then times 25 rounds of DES. And so it takes around 3 days for the system to brute force it all. And so I thought, oh, I'm just going to own all the things. I'm going to get all these cool passwords. And so you can take any of these, plug it into the system, wait 3 days. And I'm definitely going to find some really secure passwords using this method, right? you may sense a recurring theme in this talk. So I even had a friend. I was like, OK, give me the best password file that you have. And he's like, oh, I just like opened up one of these OnStar systems that's basically in every vehicle that has OnStar, and I got the shadow file off of it. So here you go. Try cracking this. I'm sure it's really tough. And it turns out that it's just root. The root password for OnStar is root. So the G pack, it's DT donkey. For this other one, it's like VUI. It's all just lowercase alpha. Like I could have just cracked this with John the Ripper in a day or whatever on my Arduino. So I'm very pissed off at this point. So if anybody here has any sort of these hashes that might be difficult to crack, please let me know, because I wasted a lot of time implementing this to go through the whole key space, and I really want it to work on something that's difficult to crack. So that's kind of how I feel. But anyway, so the API for just cracking arbitrary DES stuff is up online. You can check it out on GitHub. And then we basically send you a gzip text file with a list of all the keys, so you can try all of those. And the real thing, it's like we're trying to fix this somehow. And so I like to use this one example of ways to fix things in as far as security. So does anybody here remember session hijacking, being able to steal cookies over unencrypted web sessions and stuff? So does anybody here remember FireSheep, the Firefox plugin? Yeah. So that got a lot of press. And so we knew about session hijacking for a good half a decade. And all of these services, Facebook and Amazon and like all these major websites never fixed it. They were like, oh, it's not an issue. Only these wily hackers know how to do this. But then it took a couple of people making a Firefox plugin that made it so you go on any public Wi-Fi and you see a list of all the sessions out there. You can just click on them and log into someone's Facebook account. It took that for suddenly, within a month or two, Facebook does SSL across everything. Amazon does SSL across everything. All these websites now are fully SSL secured. And so so this is kind of like essentially what our project is trying to do is slowly but surely make it easier for everybody to do this sort of attack in order to get this finally phased out. And it seems like an impossible task to kill a legacy crypto algorithm, but that's kind of our goal at this point. So So then we started asking ourselves, like, how do we actually motivate this change more than just having a service out there that costs $20? And the biggest problem with the service is that, you know, it's a system with 48 FPGAs. It costs a lot to power it. And the biggest part is that we need to have some sort of form of rate limiting so that people don't abuse the service. And so that's why we charge the $20. And so we asked ourselves, what if we could make the service free? And so going down that rabbit hole, we were like, okay, well, so to make it free, we have to make it fast enough so that, you know, we don't have to care too much about rate limiting, or, you know, we can deal with it. And we have to make it so, you know, it draws less power and all that sort of stuff. And so the obvious solution is maybe we can make a rainbow table of this. And the main issue when you look at making rainbow tables, especially of this size, is that it's a very large key space. Just for reference, like the largest off-crack table is around 2 to the 52.5. And, you know, we were looking at doing 2 to the 56, which is, you know, about 10 times bigger than the largest password rainbow table out there. And then also, one thing with DES is that, you know, it's a block cipher, so we have plain text that we have to take into the equation. So our design goal was to make it so that it was just for a specific plain text. And so, of course, we chose the 1.1.2.2.3.3.4.4, which we could use to attack Windows authentication. And then we also wanted to make it have a really high success rate because, you know, we wanted this to be a service that was very reliable, and especially because we're doing cracking two DES keys, you know, the lower the success rate, then the higher, you know, chance of us not being able to crack, you know, two keys, and we only crack one, and then it's not really worth it. So, and then the other thing is we wanted to make it as fast as possible so it could be close to real time, so, you know, it just becomes that much more easier for people to use. So the hardware that I just had available, I was like, okay, well, I could easily afford 6 terabytes of NVMe drives because they're super fast. And then I could also borrow some, you know, high-end FPGAs for my work. So these are being borrowed for now. And, you know, I can borrow a server. And so, you know, it doesn't cost that much to put this together. And so I came up with some parameters. The chain length is around 500,000 links per chain, and then you know, around 275 billion chains per table. I was like, okay, we'll have 3 tables, and then this will get us a crack time of under 3 seconds. That sounds great. Let's do that. And so I had to generate the tables, and so I managed to borrow some hardware. I managed to borrow like 48 FPGAs. They're pretty high end, and so I was like, woo, let's get going here. And you know, put together a design and used a bunch of techniques that we figured out with putting together the first DES cracker. One of the main ones is that with large FPGAs, you end up having lots of routing issues. And so most of our designs nowadays just have a really, really narrow bus that we use to connect all these different cores together. And then essentially place and route it just for individual regions on the FPGA. So each one of these squares over here are individual clock regions. And then we just kind of chain them together in a way that we can you know, just essentially kind of create a ring for passing data between all the cores. And then it makes it so we can clock it faster and you know, just make use of more of the FPGA. And it's just a lot more efficient to do it that way. So anyway, got the core going, got the hardware, started running it. And then, of course, there's hardware problems. You know, anytime you deal with hardware, you know, running 48 FPGAs of this size in one system obviously creates lots of overheating issues. So had to deal with that. Also, turns out turning on, you know, like over 100 DES cores in an instant, power supplies don't like that for some reason. You know, just like immediately going from drawing 2 amps to drawing like 40 or 50 amps. Lots of power supplies don't like that. So we had to refactor a bunch of things, you know, fix a bunch of issues. And eventually we got it fixed. And finally got some tables back that we could check. And unfortunately, there was a really high collision rate. So then it basically meant that the tables that we spent, you know, a few weeks building were unusable. But we learned a lot of lessons. And so came up with some new parameters. Basically, because of the collisions, we had to pare down our ambitions a little bit. So we went to 12 tables instead of 3. And then that kind of increased our crack time to closer to 12 seconds, which is still reasonable, I think. So then more issues, you know, like the hardware that we borrowed ended up having to actually go out to customers for some reason. And so so we ended up having to return some and then you know, spend a few more weeks generating tables. And now we have our cracking system up. So this is a system. It has 6 FPGAs, and these are the NVMe drives. They're just like the tiny little M2 laptop ones and PCIe adapters. And then just to channel all of the air over to the FPGAs to keep them cool, I just put in some foam to channel the air. So it's very, very high-end here. And then it turned out that our coverage was better than expected. Right now, we're at about 99.65% success rate. And because ideally we would have 12 FPGAs, but because we have 6, we do like the first half of the tables on 6 and then do the second half. And so 92% of the time, it'll crack the key in under 12 seconds. And then you know, if it doesn't crack it then it'll take another 12 seconds. And so for 2 keys, our total success rate is still over 99%. And you know, most of the time, it'll take less than 24 seconds, which is pretty quick. So anyway, it's free. Anybody can go to crack.sh and submit jobs, and it'll crack DES keys with this plain text, you know, within a matter of seconds. So I thought I'd just do a quick demo so you guys can kind of see one of the practical applications of this. Might just be kind of useful, since a lot of you, it sounds like, haven't used Responder before. So let's see here. Oh. All right. So I have Kali Linux running on the left here. For some reason, my video is acting a little weird, but yeah, oh well. Okay. So let's try firing up Responder. So now this is you know, on the internal network between the Windows host and Kali Linux, and this is the same as, you know, having you know, laptop running Kali Linux just plugged into a corporate network. And now whenever any machine that's running Windows on the network, you know, goes to any file share or whatever, it's basically, it doesn't matter what the file share's name is, it's going to respond to basically everything on the network. Now, so it just captured, you know, sent out that 1.1.2.2.3.3.4.4 challenge and got response back here. So now we can take this response and go over to crack.sh and just type an NT hash and paste it in here. Oops. Oh, here. And now, you know, just type in your email address. And I didn't want to do this on the network for various reasons, and so I kind of had this pre-canned. But basically within, you know, most of the time within 24 seconds, you'll receive the NT hash for that user in an email. And we also have an API if you want to just automatically build this into Responder or any of your tools. So now this is essentially the password equivalent for that user. And then if we switch back over to here, we can do something like SMB client and tell it that we're going to give it the NT hash instead of the password. Oh, wait. And then just paste in the NT hash, and now, you know, we're on the system. And then also, I assume some people here use Metasploit or PSExec or, okay, so, so there's also this cool feature in Metasploit. You can also, there's a bunch of different tools that do this, but it's basically a way to get a shell on the system using an NT hash. So you can, you know, there's a bunch of different modules for doing stuff like this, but I'm just going to show the PSExec module. So, so we're going to basically tell it to call back to us with a shell. And then our Samba password is just our hash here. User client. And I tell it to exploit. So now it's connecting, authenticating with the server. or with the, you know, the Windows machine over here, using that NT hash, and then we can just say, oh, I want a shell. And now, you know, I'm running as a system on there, and you know, can do basically any sort of commands on the system as that user. So then you can install backdoors or, you know, whatever nefarious things you want to do. So anyway, that's the quick demo of Responder using this. And yeah, another, just to hammer this in a little bit more, you know, it doesn't matter how complex the user's password is. Doesn't matter even if the user, you know, set a password, if it's, you know, a computer user or something like that. This attack works for that 100% of the time within around 25 seconds. So, so if we look at this in the scheme of Moore's law, you know, we have the EFF DES cracker that came out in around 98-ish, and you know, took about 9.2 days to go through the whole key space. And now, fast forward about 13 bits in the future, you know, 20 years, we're looking at, you know, in theory, if Moore's law holds true, for, you know, if the EFF did the same sort of thing today, they'd be able to crack any DES key with any plain text and all that within around 97 seconds. And, you know, you could scale that obviously to well-funded organizations and governments that have, you know, a few million to throw at this to get it done in a matter of, you know, less than 10 seconds. So, so I guess, you know, with these legacy crypto algorithms, we're going to be seeing this more and more prevalent over, you know, the next few decades of Moore's law catching up to these. And then also another thing in the mix is that now, you know, especially with time memory trade-offs and rainbow tables, you know, with somewhere around $20,000, we're able to crack DES keys in 12 seconds, especially with all this new cool, you know, NVMe technology. There's other sorts of storage technology that's coming out that's just going to make these sorts of attacks even faster. So yeah, this is a really big issue. How do we get legacy crypto to be phased out? And we're trying this method right now, and we'll see if it works. But we really need help from everybody. So we have an API that you can use to integrate the service into any of your applications. We'll probably be coming out with one that goes directly into Responder that'll just automatically, you know, reverse it to an NT hash. Somebody already put together an Airbot plugin, so you can connect it to Slack or IRC if you want to submit jobs to the system over IRC or something. Should be kind of funny. And then if you want to run it yourself, we put all the code up on GitHub. It's all open source. So the DESRTOP is the actual software that kind of does all the lookups and runs stuff on the FPGAs. And then this is actually the FPGA project, the DESRT FPGA. And it's a Vivado project that you can build for any FPGA. We also, thanks to the NOC team and also Yolocation, we managed to get a copy of the 6 terabytes of tables up on the network. And so if you go to either of these websites, you can start downloading them. And we're also trying to figure out the best way of getting it out to, you know, be mirrored and torrented and all that sort of stuff. So if anybody has any ideas or happens to run their own mirror for open source projects and can spare 6 terabytes or can leave this conference with 6 terabytes of drives, come see me after the talk. And then obviously there's, you know, this, all this stuff is built on the shoulders of giants. So there's tons of research that, you know, is kind of the precursor to all of this. You know, my talk with Moxie and Marsh a while ago. Ian Foster gave a talk earlier today, helped with some of the host AP stuff that I was working on. And then again, special thanks to Protagonist and the NOC and Yolocation for helping get the stuff online when I approached them basically yesterday afternoon and asked them if they could help me get these tables up so people can download them. So anyway, help me kill legacy crypto. And if anybody wants to run free jobs, once again, you know, this is just a method of you know, making sure the system isn't abused. So just email me if you have any interesting research ideas. Everything's online. And then also, this whole thing is, you know, basically all the money that this generates goes directly toward running our TourCon events. And so our next TourCon event that we have coming up is in San Diego at the beginning of next month. And then we also run the US Hacker Camp called TourCamp. and that's going on next summer. So just as an extremely shameless plug for Tour Camp, it's a lot of fun. We're out on one of the islands in Washington, and there's people bring, you know, payphones and lasers, and same stuff that you see here. So if you want to come party with some of the American hackers, don't forget to add that to your calendar. So thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you very much, David. And we have plenty of time for questions. The microphones are open. If you have any question, just queue in front of the mic.
Crickets.
Okay, we have a first question.
Do you have any numbers on how long it takes, how expensive it is to run this on EC2 F1 instance?
Oh, yeah. Like yeah, so there's Amazon F1 instances that came out recently, and yeah, I was on their beta program and played around with it a little bit. It looked like based on their pricing, it would still cost like over $100 to crack a disk key, like $110 or $20, I think, is what I calculated. So yeah, we're probably going to eventually migrate over to that, but hopefully the pricing will be a little bit better, or maybe we could just add it as an option if somebody, you know, just wants to, you know, we could provide an AMI or something if somebody just wants to pay it out of their pocket to run it on there.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
More questions from the audience.
It seems like you've done DES pretty much as thoroughly as can be done. So what's next?
So I've done some research on automotive, like immobilizer algorithms, like HiTech 2 and DST 40 and 80 and stuff like that. And so, I mean, there's lots of low-hanging fruit in that sort of, you know, in the RFID crypto stuff. Basically anything less than 80 bits is probably something that we could, you know, look into. But yeah, it'll be a while before we can attack anything, you know, much higher than that. But if anybody has any ideas, please let me know.
So you basically already answered this one, but triple DES or double DES, basically, two take keys, that's way out of reach still, right?
Yeah. Maybe once storage and, you know, the being able to do meet-in-the-middle attacks and stuff like that is a lot more feasible, then we'll be able to do that. But yeah, for now, it's kind of... for me, like, practical attacks are things that we could do, you know, in under 24 hours. Because then if it takes longer than that, then it's not really going to be, you know, that useful to most people. And so I think it'll be a while before that's a reality. But yeah, for now, triple DES is safe for people like us, at least.
Any more questions?
Okay, well, if anybody wants to chat more about this or wants to help spread the tables, then please come and see me after. I'll probably be just right over here for now. So thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you very much, David.